February 20th, 2009, it's the Lullabot Podcast. Lullabot Podcast. It's the Lullabot Podcast, episode number 70. Wow, 70. I say this every time because it's like, gosh, we haven't done that many. But, you know, then we have. And then it's really not amazing anymore. But this is episode number 70. And I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with...
Angie Byron.
And...
Addie Berry.
And also...
James Walker.
And we're going to talk about Drupal. We get together every 2 weeks, thereabouts. Sometimes a little longer, sometimes a little less. And talk about Drupal. And this week, gosh, we're just kind of checking in with some various things. We wanted to kind of particularly check in with the Drupal.org upgrade and sort of talk a little bit about upgrading in general in Drupal. How are you guys? What's new?
I'm good.
We're good.
It's been an exciting month, and there's excitement coming in the next few weeks, so I'm actually rather hectic right now.
DrupalCon is coming up. That's exciting.
Yeah, March is looming.
Yes, March comes up quickly. There's always like 1,000 different conferences. I'm going to South by Southwest as well. There's always a few Drupalers down there straggling around, speaking their Drupal language.
They also have the usability sprint happening in Baltimore, and I actually have to make my house livable for guests in a matter of days here. So, yeah, that's whoa. See.
So the usability sprint is before DrupalCon, is that right?
Yeah, it starts next Wednesday.
And what exactly is the usability sprint? What happens there?
We actually have a testing lab up at the University of Baltimore. That's being made available to us, and so we're bringing people in and actually sitting them down and doing usability testing with the current state of Drupal core, and then we're going to talk about it, make a big presentation, and do a presentation at DrupalCon about sort of what we find out and what we can do about it.
This happened, so there were usability studies done in Baltimore before, correct?
Yeah.
And then there was also stuff happened in Minneapolis prior to DrupalCon Boston. And not a lot has changed usability-wise in Drupal core since Boston, or am I completely wrong about that?
You're not wrong, but I think what has happened is Boston, so this would be like a year ago today, more or less, we did a big usability sprint at University of Minnesota, and this is the first time we'd ever done this. And there were several kind of top developers there at the time, and we got to watch these people just struggle through using Drupal. And that was really the first time I think that has ever happened. Like, we all have had that person in our lives that we try to show Drupal to, and they just didn't get it, and we assumed, they're not technical or whatever, and that's the reason. But, I mean, the people who were involved in that usability study were, like, people who used Movable Type and WordPress and Joomla. You know, they had used other systems, so it's not like they were not familiar, and they knew HTML and stuff, you know, so and that kind of thing. So I think that was shocking. So I think the main thing that the University of Minnesota study did was kind of wake the community up to this problem, and a lot of people were a little skeptical. They kind of tried to write that off as like, well, that was just one person's experience or whatever, that kind of stuff. But by the University of Baltimore study, which was in the summer of last year, people really started to get that, okay, we have a problem here. And what we've seen since then is the formation of a usability team. We always had the usability group on Drupal.org, groups.drupal.org, that, you know, kind of discussed things and kind of people just sort of, you know, a place for people to talk about usability. But it wasn't until DrupalCon Sega that we actually had like a team in place. So we have like Yo Roy, Roy Schulten, Bojan Summers, and Jeff Noyes from Acquia, and all kinds of people sort of focusing just on this. And since that's mobilized, we actually have seen quite a bit of work around the Drupal 7 issue queues. For now, they've kind of been focusing on some of the closer wins. So, for example, they're not working on you know, completely retooling everything at this point. They're trying to get some basic, you know, sort of common sense things in first, and that's been our main focus. But one really exciting development is that Dries Bytart, the project lead, has contracted out Mark Bolton, who worked on the Drupal Auto redesign, to also spend some time working on Drupal 7 usability. So that'll start in March, shortly after DrupalCon. I think that's going to really energize the community for thinking of kind of big picture, you know, stuff like retooling the entire administration panel or totally redoing how the node pages work or all of this stuff that we know is painful and is hard to kind of, you know, think about it. If they use that same sort of, you know, process that they used in the redesign, where we do card sorting and we do, you know, sort of Flickr post-offs, where people, you know, come up with different designs and draw arrows all over everything and stuff like that. I think it could be really, really awesome, and I'm really looking forward to this stuff making it into Drupal 7.
So, is the Drupal Association paying for this work that Mark Bolton's doing?
No, Acquias hired him, presumably because, you know, if Drupal is easier to use, that means Acquia Drupal is easier to use. So it's a contract with them. The Drupal Association sponsoring it would get kind of sticky because we have in our statutes that we can't guide core development, where, you know, Mark Bolton is an individual in the community and Dries Bytart is an individual in the community. And, you know, obviously anything that they do gets put through community review and stuff like that. But it's a little bit different dynamic. It's the same thing as Lullabot or Bright or Rain City Studios or somebody like that, hiring someone to work on something
but
for Drupal.
But this isn't, it's not really core development. I mean, it's just usability. It's like studies and boxes and arrows and
Yeah.
It's there's gray area though. Cause I mean, it's cause it's going to translate ultimately, presumably, into the development, you know, the code to, you know, if we're talking about, you know, an administration dashboard sort of overhaul, there's going to be a lot of code behind that. You know, I mean, we'll remember, but for those who weren't around, you know, when Drupal 5 launched, there was similar sort of amounts of code and patches behind, you know, getting us to the admin interface that we have now. So yeah, it's, I mean, it's definitely a gray area. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Mark Bolton with the Drupal.org redesign set a really good precedent, and I think did a just, you know, really commendable job in sort of engaging the community. And so, you know, hopefully that practice will play out with this as well, because there's, you know, a whole lot of people who I'm sure have lots of ideas about what could get better and what could change. Yeah, everybody's got a chance to have their say.
Huh. It's interesting, sort of the gray areas there.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of, you know, I don't know Mark Bolton at all, but I mean, where I'm sitting with him having a beer right now, I would say one of his biggest challenges is going to be, you know, in doing this design, you know, and the usability work, is it's going to be really hard to try to sort of accommodate everybody's use, you know, in all of the sort of work that's been done on usability in the past, it's really, really hard to sort of address all the potential uses of Drupal. And I think, you know, to get something really elegant, he's going to have to make some hard choices. So it'll be, yeah, I mean, I wish him luck.
Balancing the needs of the community versus the needs of his client. Versus what's actually good.
Yeah, versus the needs of sections of the community. I mean, you know, forever Drupal's had this thing where it's used in so many different scenarios, you know, from my personal blog to, you know, to large publishing sites to the Drupal.org community, and what makes sense sort of as, you know, as an administration interface for, you know, for one of those uses doesn't make any sense at all for, you know, for lots of the others. So there's going to have to be a lot of sort of compromising and choosing and trying to select what works the best for most people while still, you know, being a legitimate usability enhancement. So yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I think you'll see a lot of that offset by having, you know, core provide some sensible defaults, but keeping with our attitude that, you know, everything that Core provides can be overridden to do whatever that you want. So what we'll probably see is the default installation profile in Drupal 7 setting up some sensible defaults for like a, you know, typical content management site, but then you know, the ability for either contributed modules or perhaps writing Core to totally customize the crap out of that and make it you know, fit whatever specific needs that your site has.
Right. Yeah. I mean, one of the things there is that there's, you know, there's a whole lot of power in being the Drupal core default. You know, I mean, so, you know, so we do a lot of that, like, yeah, you know, we've got sort of the defaulting core, but you can totally override it. You know, I mean, from things like the default theme engine, right? Well, PHP templates the default in core, and hence 99.9% of the Drupal themes are PHP template, even though it's technically possible to use something like Smarty. And same thing with, you know, with the admin interface itself. Since Drupal 5, we've been able to do, you know, an administration theme, but I mean, I think I've seen maybe two, you know, ever. And it's so, you know, I mean, there's a huge, you know, if it is what Drupal does by default and what is the core for new users, it's going to be all they know. And for a lot of people, there'll be this, you know, this strong, oh, well, you know, let's just work with the default, or, you know, there's too much work or overhead in trying to do, you know, a total alternate. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, there's,
yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, there's a huge, you know, being the core default is sort of a huge position in terms of what will actually get used and what people will learn and be familiar with. So,
well, this has always sort of been Drupal's sort of greatest strength and greatest weakness at the same time, was trying to be all things to all people meant that it was nothing to any one individual person, you know, that you kind of needed to make it your own. And that wasn't always clear to people what to do. And so by sort of starting to make it more usable, you kind of need to pick your use cases. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the biggest sort of win is that the default use case sort of works for most people and is really, really just an awesome experience. Yeah. You know, and it starts to get talked about like, you know, like the new WordPress dashboard, or, you know, like, you know, some of these other systems that just have really nice sort of out of the box experiences. And that starts to bring a lot of people into Drupal and starts to, you know, get a lot of people using Drupal that otherwise haven't, because they weren't able to overcome. The sort of the pessimistic downside is that, you know, there are a lot of concessions about who this interface is really targeted to, and it sort of turns off or pushes out or excludes a lot of the people that have otherwise had lots of success or really been attracted to Drupal. So yeah, it's going to be a tricky dance. And like I said, I think it's, you know, I think Mark Bolton's shown that he's able to sort of engage the community and give that feedback. But at the same time, he's got some tricky decisions to make. So, yeah, good luck.
Yeah. Just one more thing on the note of this usability sprint is this is actually being sort of bootstrapped by the community, by the usability team, and they still could use some help funding it. So if you could go to drupal.org/node/365191, I know, hey, you could both read a bit more about what they're going to be working on, as well as, you know, sort of just give them a little bit of money to help with travel expenses and food and stuff like that. This work is really important because this is the first time ever that we've done these usability studies at a point where we're able to test a version of Drupal before it's past code freeze, quote-unquote, when we can't do anything about whatever problems that we find. So it's really crucial that this usability testing, or the timing of this, is really crucial from, because whatever they find in terms of changes we've made so far that are confusing or whatever, we have lots of time that we can make adjustments for that. So I'd really like to make sure that they're able to focus down there and get as much good information fed into this new usability initiative as possible. So.
Yeah, and even though I'm not sure when that chip-in ends, but usability testing starting on Wednesday, but we can continue to take donations even after we start the testing. Right now I'm stocking up on peanut butter and jelly and bread so that we can have lunches and stuff. So,
goodness, what else has been going on? We have a couple of announcements, Lullabot things. First of all, I don't know if we've mentioned it on the podcast before. I can't remember, but the Do It With Drupal seminar, which happened in December, the video archive from that is up online now. There's a couple of free videos that you can view, and then you can get access to the whole archive. It's like 40 hours worth of Drupal-y goodness, training stuff at doitwithdrupal.com, and it's all there. And we used Kaltura as the company to do our video stuff, and it's really neat the way the video works. We did some cool stuff with, I don't know if I've mentioned this either, my beauty tips module. It's not a module, it's a plugin. It's a jQuery plugin. And if you go to the videos page and roll over, it has a little Ajax thing that gets the descriptions of the videos and pops it up and stuff like that. I don't know. The jQuery, I've been getting a lot of really good feedback from people in the jQuery world from my beauty tips plugin for jQuery. So it does like pop-up bubbles. I don't know. How would you guys describe it? It's
tooltips.
Tooltips, help bubbles. Yeah. I don't know. Everybody calls them something different. Like in Google Maps, when you click on something, it pops up a little bubble.
But they're beautiful.
Well, they're
just the tooltip. It's
they're potentially more pretty than some of the other options out there. Potentially, to me, I thought that they were.
Yeah. So you don't have to say it. I love that. You know, it will calculate where it is on the screen and orient itself appropriately. So if it, you know, if you're popping up at the bottom of the screen, the bubble will come up above or things like that. It's pretty slick.
I put out a new version recently that adds Ajax functionality because Earl Miles was asking about using that in the advanced help module. And that'd be really cool because the advanced help has those little question mark things. And if you roll over those, it'd be cool to just pop up the thing rather than clicking and having an extra window pop up, which is the way it works now. So that's beauty tips. Workshops. We've got workshops coming up in Providence.
Yeah, we do. The workshops are back. March 30th to April 3rd, we'll be doing a combination week of Drupal development, module development, and Drupal theming. Very, very popular. We've had a lot of people. So we took a few months off, you know, we do it with Drupal. And we've been shooting a new set of DVDs on CCK and Views that are being edited as we speak. So we've been, you know, sort of working on some stuff. But yeah, we've had a lot of people asking, hey, when are the next workshops? When are the next workshops? Well, now you know. It's March 30th to April 3rd in our beloved place of Providence, Rhode Island. So check that out at lullabot.com/training.
Providence, convenient to everywhere.
And well, to you at least.
Well, you know, Boston, New York, got the whole East Coast. It's like
half that East Coast train corridor.
Yeah, it's like half of America right here.
Them Spitans were doing a lot of
fun. And there go all of our West Coasters. Bye bye.
I was thinking more of the Midwest, which is actually where half of America is.
The O'Reilly book. This is the part of the podcast where we just pimp all the Lullabot stuff. The O'Reilly book went into its third printing. Is that right? Fourth?
It's printing.
About to go into its third,
we have a few days to review.
Yeah. But it's been selling really well. And I was up on Amazon sort of putting together some, I don't know, information about the book and stuff, and the Amazon reviewers are loving it.
Mm-hmm.
The book is called Using Drupal. You can buy it on Amazon. You can find out more information about that at usingdrupal.com. And it's the first O'Reilly book, and was written as a collaborative effort as by the Lullabot team. We internally call it the Lullabook.
Yeah.
which sort of paints us into a corner if we ever write another one.
Lullabook 2.
Ooh. Yeah.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. But yeah, no, the book's been doing, I've been really happy with the comments and stuff like that. One thing I should say, though, because some people might not know this, it's a book that's not intended for, like, developer types. That's more like pro Drupal development's sort of angle, is if you want to build modules and stuff like that. This book is written so that it could be somebody's first Drupal book, but it could also be used by an intermediate Drupal developer. What it does, it just kind of showcases all of the... Oh, not all of the modules, but a lot of the contributed modules to show how you can build sites. And basically, we walk you through how to build, you know, for example, a product review website or an image gallery or, you know, a t-shirt store and stuff like that. And just what modules we chose and why. And it sort of walks you through both kind of a top down overview of what these modules do, as well as like a sort of a bottom up, okay, here's how you click around in here and actually configure them.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree that it's not for techie people. I think it's not a techie focused, it's not focused on the code, but, right. But I mean,
but even developers who have the head in code all the time don't actually know how to build sites a lot of the time.
Well, it's true. It's focused on configuring modules. I've heard people say that it was valuable because they otherwise would have gone off and coded this stuff, right, and didn't realize Drupal actually could just do this by clicking around.
We say that all the time with our clients, right? I mean, you get clients and they've basically, you know, recoded views or something, or all these different kinds of things. It's like, don't you know there's something out there that does that already? And it's just nice to have that sort of documented in one way. There's so many modules for Drupal. It's really hard to sort of figure out, you know, if you haven't built a Drupal site before, to just sort of see some Drupal sites being built. And this is kind of that book.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of really positive feedback to the structure of the book. Both on, I've had people, you know, posting to Twitter, people I've just, you know, seen at the Toronto user group and things like that. That the structure for sort of any experience level, but the structure of sort of this case study style where, you know, each chapter we sort of set up a mock site that we're going to build and going through, you know, what we're going to use to build it and why we're going to use that and not some of the potentially similar modules that are available. That I think that sort of process is really valuable to not just, you know, beginners, but also people who maybe have done some work with Drupal and have, you know, spent a lot of time sort of replicating features or banging their heads against certain walls and stuff. So,
What I was trying to communicate, and apparently badly, was that a lot of people, when they see an O'Reilly branding on a book, might assume this is for Uber geeks because they think of things like Camel Book and they think of things like, you know, Unix Bibles and things like that. So I just wanted to make sure people knew that this was more about showing off what Drupal could do, and that even if you don't know a lick of PHP, you can get benefit out of it.
Yeah, I guess that is funny because O'Reilly is kind of known particularly for their Cody books, and this is a less Cody book. But
yeah, does everybody universally know that the Camel Book is programming Perl?
No. You ruined my insider thing, man. Now they're all going to know
that. I just want to know, because I think a lot of people do. Like, it's definitely
one. Well, a lot of people who are coders do, but that doesn't mean that.
Well, and that became Perl's symbol, right? I mean, the O'Reilly picked.
But who uses Perl?
I don't know, dude. My copy is actually sitting right here. Not that
I admit I also have a copy. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I have a copy. I have a copy as well. Before I discovered PHP.
I even have a Camel magnet, O'Reilly magnet, in my office.
Nice. We're all closet pro geeks. The truth comes out.
Anyway.
All right. Woo! Okay. All right, back to the podcast. Okay. What else do we have? Drupal Association elections. So now Everyone on this podcast is on the Drupal Association.
That's true.
Yeah.
With Brad.
So
who wants to break it down? Angie Byron, break it down.
All right.
Angie's the only board member, so that's why she gets designated to actually.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. That's right. Don't you forget it. Okay. So basically, we had an open application process where anybody could apply to become a permanent member of the association. You needed to have one of the existing members sort of back up your application, which conforms to our statutes a bit better. And I think it was a good move anyway, because it sort of forced people to really think through their applications. Every single application we received was really good, and it made the choice really hard to make.
You were supposed to think through your applications?
I know, eh?
Jeff, we know how much time you spent on yours. Womp,
womp, womp.
So, there were 27 total candidates who submitted applications, and of those, only six were accepted, which doesn't sound like much, but I was actually pretty happy with that number, because you have to remember, you need a two-thirds majority out of 24 votes in order to get accepted, and that's a lot of people that need to kind of, you know, believe that you are, you know, both someone who is kind of going to be a steward of the Drupal project, as well as the goals that you outlined being appropriate to being on the association to accomplish. And, there's just a variety of factors that kind of go into that. So the new permanent members that we elected were Tiffany Ferris, who's helped do a lot of the Drupal.org redesign project management stuff. Carrie Gordon, who is a big event organizer down in L.A. Bill Fitzgerald, who's done a lot of work with nonprofits and education. Jeff Robbins, and I don't know who he is or why we elected him. I guess
Woo!
That was... Jeff Robbins is kind of... Jeff Robbins, what was your platform?
more pizzas.
Woo! Freezing pizza.
No more detention.
Exactly. So, longer lunch breaks.
All right. So Jeff Robbins ran under sort of a getting the word out marketing communication sort of platform.
Yeah.
When, you know, the Drupal Association does a lot of work, and historically we haven't done a really great job about informing people of what that work is. So hopefully, you know, Jeff will be able to help kind of get the word out a bit and stuff. David Strauss, who has done a lot of work on the Drupal infrastructure team, and Christoph Van Tome, who is one of the co-organizers of the SEGED DrupalCon, and has just been a really involved community member for a long time. I wanted to congratulate those folks. And then after the General Assembly was elected, which is basically all the people, we all got together and elected the board for next year. So that's going to be an 8-person board. Dries Beitart, myself, Tiffany Ferris, Larry Garfield, Carrie Gordon, Gerhard, I don't
Killis
know how to pronounce this.
Killis Reiter.
Kieran Lal and Jacob Redding. And we'll be having a formal discussion at DrupalCon about who's taking on what roles, and specifically in the board, but basically that's going to be the 2009 board, and then next year we'll hold elections again for all the positions except for president and treasurer. So, anyway, that was a great election. Lots of really strong candidates, and I wanted to thank everybody who applied. It, you know, made the decisions really tough, and hope to see some of you next year and stuff. So.
And throughout the year.
And throughout the year, yes. Thank you. That's
it. You know,
yeah, I would say,
like,
yeah.
Still doing the work that you want to do. I mean, there's no reason to not do the work just because, a lot of the work that we do in the association, you can also do in the community and still move a lot of initiatives forward. So.
Yeah, that's one of the hardest things. You know, having done two elections now for this is in looking at the applications, it's really, really hard. And sort of most of the discussion tends to be, you know, like, is the work that this person doing, is that something that needs an association position, or, you know, or is that work that you know, they can do anyway? And it usually comes down to, you know, all of the stuff that gets done on the association level is also stuff that, for the most part, people can do, you know, in terms of organizing local events and promoting Drupal, marketing Drupal, talking about Drupal. All of that stuff is, you know, things that people can do without, you know, being on the association. And so, yeah, absolutely encourage people to continue to do the awesome work that they do.
Cool. Since it's been a little while since we've kind of done a catching up podcast, and Drupal has since turned 8 years old. There's not really much to say about that other than woo.
Happy birthday.
Happy belated birthday.
Here's a happy belated birthday card. I'm sorry it's late. But you know, people always, everyone who works with Drupal, they say, how long has Drupal been around? And the answer is, technically, 8 years it's been around. Got a slow, very organic growth kind of a thing. Probably 4 years ago, 3 years ago. I know, like, when I got started with Drupal, it was probably 3.5, maybe 4 years ago, and the first Drupal conference of sorts, I don't even think it was called that exactly, that I went to was in Vancouver, and there were probably about 80 people there. So, I mean, and as a reference, DrupalCon DC is currently sold out with over 1,300 people attending. So it's been a organic and sort of exponential growth. And
yes,
bigger now.
Yeah.
What other news do we have?
Well, speaking of DC, coming up soon is DrupalCon DC with the 1,300 plus people all descending on the U.S. Capitol. Will by far, I think the second closest DrupalCon was last year in Boston, which was 900 ish. So yeah, almost half again as big this year. Should be pretty interesting.
And there's even going to be, from rumors I hear, an unconference around it for people who couldn't actually get a ticket.
Yeah, that's been actually one of the most fascinating things.
That's awesome.
DrupalCon officially sold out a few weeks ago at 1,300 people. And there has been, active ticket swapping, people trying to, I mean, I know we've had people coming to us saying, hey, do you have any
selling tickets? A ticket on eBay.
Really?
It's pretty crazy. But yeah, so if you are still interested, there is on DrupalCon.org a way to get waitlisted and a forum for doing ticket swaps and things.
There's actually a Twitter feed for something like UnDCDC or something like that. I don't remember what it is, but for people who are trying to pull together, like literally they're going to try and do like a little bit of a bar camp thing around the conference for people who can't get in.
Cool. That's
interesting. Cool.
And we're going to be organizing some kind of a party around it. And you should get on the Lullabot mailing list to find out about that. You can get on the mailing list on the homepage of lullabot.com or follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/lullabot. I think everybody on the podcast has their own individual Twitter accounts as well. James and I are in what we call the Twitter Smackdown. The James has always been winning, but I still try my best. My Twitter username is JJeff, JJEFF, and James is Walka, WALKAH. These are also coincidentally our same usernames on Drupal.org.
Oh, I totally thought you were going to spell it Walker and like get
throw people off.
No, yeah. I'm not. You know, we compete, but you know, we love.
He's been very gracious.
He's keeping it real.
Of course, the interesting thing is actually the Lullabot account just topped you.
I know.
And is now technically second in the running.
Well, I think I should be able to pimp because I am so far behind everybody else that I have like no hope of ever catching up.
Well, hit us with your username.
All right. It's really surprisingly different, but it's twitter.com/addonesun. ADD, the numeral 1SUN.
Well, personally branded.
Which for those of you who are you know, not as clever as the rest of people like me, that is actually Addison. which took a really long time to.
I had to spell it funny because the name was always taken. Addison was always taken, so I had to spell it funny. And then I always say it to myself as Addison, but other people always see it as Ad.
One son.
Son, like in this, and so anyway, it's just very confusing.
Angie, you want to pimp your Twitter account?
Web chick.
Bam.
This is good. I follow people, but then when it shows up in my thing, it shows the people's real names, so I don't know exactly. But I didn't realize everyone has their own personal branding going on the podcast. Nicely done, everyone. I want to give a round of applause for personal branding. I've been finding that I've been getting a lot of feedback on the Beauty Tips plugin through Twitter. That's kind of fun. I've been sort of tweeting about the development of it as I've been going along, and a lot of people are sending me messages back sort of through Twitter that they're using it and enjoying it, or where they're using it and stuff like that. And that's fun.
Following like Drupal, like I have a Twitter Drupal search, and so I see all the tweets that have Drupal in them and stuff, and that's sometimes overwhelming, but it's actually a lot of fun to see a lot of information, answer questions, and stuff like that. So,
well, James, your talk at DrupalCon is sort of based around that, is it, around a Twitter search for Drupal, right?
Yeah, well, not based on that, but yeah, so... Sure, I'll talk about that. Yeah, so the story behind... So yes, I'm doing a talk at Drupal called Why I Hate Drupal. And I guess the inspiration... Yeah, it's two parts inspiration. One, watching, you know, Twitter and forums and various other things with people just, you know... if you Google for, like, Drupal sucks or hate Drupal, there's a lot of interesting things that show up. But actually, it came from DjangoCon. So Django's a Python-based, you know, web app framework. And the keynote talk at their first ever DjangoCon was Cal Henderson from Flickr, who did a talk called Why I Hate Django. And it's a great talk. Find it on Google. It's on Google Video. But it was really, it's a fun look at, basically things that could be better, things to do. So we've got that. And for all those people who have ever found Drupal frustrating, this talk's for you.
It's a pragmatic look at Drupal, but you were saying that at one point you were looking at the Drupal search on Twitter, and not all of them are positive.
No, they're not. Yeah, and I follow the just a search for Drupal and a couple of other things, and you get a lot of people announcing new modules they've written or saying they're testing out Drupal or Drupal's awesome, but yeah.
Drupal is a
greatest people as well.
Drupal is a brick wall on which I keep banging my head.
Yeah. Yes, you get those as well. So
yeah.
Hey, this is unrelated to the current topic because I want to talk about why Drupal rocks. But this this came up on Twitter though. Obama is using Drupal in recovery.gov.
I heard about that. Yeah, that's exciting.
And it's using nice menus. Woo!
Oh, yeah. Is it using quiz module? Oh, I'm just kidding. Anyway, nice. I thought that was pretty awesome. Not only because, hey, it's Drupal, so he must be a smart guy, but also because it's encouraging to see the United States government using open source.
I've been having some... I had a meeting with Tim O'Reilly a couple of weeks ago, and he was sort of asking, saying, like, oh, I've been thinking a lot about... the way that, government and open source and stuff like that. And he was asking how much of that we'd seen in Drupal. And I talked sort of about the history of it, but I hadn't really heard specifically of the Obama administration using Drupal until that. But that's a good one.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Recovery.gov is add that to your list of Drupal sites. When your client says, "Really, Drupal?" You go, "Huh?" Show them your
works
list.
Works for Obama.
Works for Obama.
You say, "Yes, we can."
What else? There's been a bunch of work around the Drupal trademark stuff.
Oh, well, before we talk about that, just one last note on DrupalCons. The next DrupalCon will be in Europe, in Paris, in the fall.
Right. Paris, yes. Fall.
September 1st to 5th in Paris, yeah.
Yeah, well, so September is what we're... I found this out as well, that we were not actually supposed to give specific dates yet, so...
Shall I edit that? So it'll say September, so September-ish?
When September. Did they say that?
See, that's the thing, I was never told this. I was telling somebody in the channel the dates, because I know those dates.
Okay, so what we can say
and
is...
Charlie said, oh no, you're not supposed to say...
Start over. So... when are those dates?
What?
Conflict. Should we even be doing a podcast? I mean, really? So DrupalCon is happening in Paris in September-ish. Dates may be subject to change.
Yes.
Yeah, they're going to... basically, they need to finalize up stuff, and then they'll be announcing the dates. And I would imagine that more official information about it is probably going to come out like right after DrupalCon DC or during DrupalCon DC and stuff. But they also really want people to focus on DrupalCon DC right now.
Don't pay attention to Paris. DC, focus on DC.
They can't see you, so you can't see it, okay?
Don't pay attention to the DrupalCon behind the curtain.
It's not a bulge. Okay.
All right.
Is that a
DrupalCon
behind the curtain? I'm sorry. See, I said that, and I thought, oh, that didn't sound...
That was a Wizard of Oz reference. I don't know where you were going.
I was just thinking, you know, DrupalCon's a big round, you know, drop, and if it was behind a curtain...
Moving along. Yeah.
So I understand there's been a bunch of work done on the Drupal trademark recently. Who wants to talk about that and what that means? I don't... I know that there's some drafts.
Yes. If you go to groups.drupal.org/legal, you'll find the draft trademark policy available for comment. So go ahead and go there and comment on it. It's basically up for comment for a few days, and then he's going to... Dries is going to incorporate the community feedback and then put out, hopefully, like maybe one more draft and then kind of finalize it, because it's been sort of in the making for a while now.
Groups.drupal.org/legal, and you can see the new trademark policy draft there, which could affect some people.
If you're using the word Drupal in like your company name or your domain name, if you're using the word Drupal at all, you want to have a read through it and just make sure that that you're going to be in the clear. I know that Dries has spent a lot of time working on the trademark policies. You know, spent several hours with lawyers and has tried really hard to model it off of, you know, similar sort of open source projects. But if you're using the word Drupal to sell, particularly if you're using it to sell your company or services, you'll want to make sure that you're playing by the rules as the rules are written.
Yep.
Cool. Let's move on. We were going to talk a little bit about sort of the stuff happening in core with Drupal 7, but let's sort of jump ahead to the Drupal upgrade, and we will do another podcast and talk about kind of what's going on in Drupal 7 and
once we figure it out.
Well, but it also, I mean, the thing about talking about what happens in the next version of Drupal, it helps people in making their decisions and building Drupal 6 sites now, because a lot of times it's modules that kind of become brought into core, and you can use those. It helps in choosing which modules to use for the sites that you're building today, knowing that you'll be sort of syncing up with what's going on in the future. But we will talk about all that probably in the next podcast, number 71. But let's talk about the upgrade of Drupal.org and sort of generally issue. I mean, it's funny because when we list all the different sites out there running Drupal, one of the ones that people oftentimes fail to mention is Drupal.org, which is actually one of the largest Drupal sites out there in terms of traffic and number of users the way that it's being used, and it was upgraded this week or is in the process of being upgraded. And as is the case with upgrading a lot of Drupal sites, even some relatively small scale sites, there can be some issues. And how is that going? How did that go?
It's been bumpy. To say the least. And yeah, I mean, you know, we can talk about all the reasons it may or, you know, may or may not have gone as well as people had hoped. But I mean, a lot of it comes down to, you know, the just the size and complexity of Drupal.org, and there's a lot of sort of lessons there for big complex sites. You know, I mean, every time you turn on a module in Drupal, you know, you introduce a potential upgrade hassle, which is not a don't ever turn on modules, you know, suggestion, but you know, it is it's important to remember that, you know, all of this stuff is going to have to move module to module or version to version. So,
well, a lot of people maybe don't understand why Drupal is complex, because, or Drupal.org is complex, because on the face of it, it just looks like a forum, and, you know, basically it, a forum, right, with some, you know, some,
oh, and a whole, just,
well, it does front. It doesn't look like a particularly customized Drupal site,
right, and it doesn't look like there's a ton of pieces and stuff like that, and people, yeah, tend to not actually think about what project module is or is doing for all, yeah, of those things.
Yeah, the biggest point of complexity, or certainly in the top three, is the fact that, yeah, all of the Drupal code, bug tracking, issue tracking, task management, patch queue stuff is all running on Drupal.org for not only for Drupal core, but for every single contributed module and theme, et cetera, et cetera. And so, yeah, so to support that, there's been a lot of, you know, I mean, in the last, you know, in the last sort of version cycle, there's been a lot of work gone in to make that, you know, make all of that more useful to developers and to reviewers and things like that. And, you know, and thus has introduced a lot of complexity. Go ahead.
So what were the sticking points with upgrading Drupal.org?
Well, I mean, one of the sticking points was, it goes back to the Drupal 6 release cycle. Drupal 6 was released well in advance of kind of critical modules like CCK and Views. And at the same time, we have this project module, which, because it wasn't using some of this newer technology like CCK and Views, pretty much nobody outside of the Drupal.org, you know, itself was using this. So this might sound familiar to any companies out there that have, you know, their sort of custom module that handles whatever aspect of their site, and it's not part of Contrib, and they're maintaining that themselves. We essentially had that sort of a situation, although it wasn't Contrib. And Derek Wright and Chad Phillips have put and Adam Light have put a tremendous amount of work over the last year trying to generalize project modules so that it could be useful to anyone. And in fact, they're starting to make inroads on that. Like jQuery.com is using project module now,
yeah,
to handle their kind of download sections and stuff. And with the Drupal 6 port, it's becoming very palatable to well on the way to becoming sort of an alternative to Track and Unfuddle and some of these other things, because it uses Views, so you can customize your issue listings to have whatever columns that you want and stuff like that. There's still a lot of work to do in generalizing that stuff, but it's come a tremendous way. So one of the main issues was this project module and project issue module are very complex. They're running an entire release system, so all the downloads that you do, the checksum validation, being able to tie in with CVS and create, you know, the little tarball, you know, files that you download when you download a thing, those all come from CVS with the developers. So it's all a very complex sort of thing that most sites don't have to deal with. So there was that aspect of it. And part of the issue was, you know, it got as Project Module got ported, they also had it made use of the views module in order to solve the chicken egg problem of how do we get more people to use this so more people maintain it, and kind of put the fork in the road that said we're going to port it to views this time. And views happened to change dramatically between 5 and 6. So it was just sort of this like sort of snowball effect of delays.
Yeah, I think that's a good point too, though, that I mean, Drupal.org is, well, I'll be bold and I'll say it's the longest running Drupal instance. So that, you know, I mean, so it's been through every upgrade, you know, since the beginning of time, and has had, you know, it has a lot of these modules like Project Module that have been around since well before Views even existed, let alone, you know, Views in its current state. And also has had, I mean, Project Module has had several different maintainers, and has actually spent a lot of time unmaintained because, you know, it was sort of only in use on Drupal.org. And as long as it worked on Drupal.org, then, you know, nobody really touched it beyond that. So getting Project Module sort of modernized has been a big chunk of the task. Another huge, you know, so Drupal.org also faces a lot in that it's one of the biggest Drupal installs in terms of amount of content. So one of the other things that has happened, or is happening in the process of this upgrade, is changing the search backend from using Drupal's default built-in search to using the Apache Solr project, which check out podcast number 69 to find out more about that. But you know, in addition to just upgrading modules, there's also been a lot of shift to changing how, you know, major pieces of the site worked, which again adds yet another layer of complexity to the whole process.
Yeah, I mean, upgrading any living website is a challenge, right? I mean, there are other just sort of general things that we see with, in particular with a lot of our clients, right, who they have their live server, and then they usually have some sort of a staging server type of thing where they can kind of test things out. And kind of once they get things running on the staging servers, there's always that question about how do you move it over to the live server and syncing things up that way. And everybody's kind of got their own methods. You know, I'm sure that there's people even talking about this at DrupalCon, you know, sort of what do we call that? Deployment strategies of deploying new features and stuff like that. Because with these community sites like Drupal is, unless you take them offline, they're going to continue to get new comments and new posts and new content, and all of a sudden your staging server will get out of sync with your live server. So it's not like you can just make your changes in the database and move them over. You can bring it offline, but you can only do that for a certain period of time. Drupal.org went offline for the upgrade. How do those things sort of compare to the process that Drupal.org went through?
Yeah, it's you know, they went through a fairly similar process, you know, in the fact that So leading up to the, you know, the actual switchover of Drupal.org from 5 to 6, there were a handful of upgrade sprints where, you know, sort of key people got in a room and, you know, tested it out, made sure, you know, worked on things like, you know, this porting of Project Module and all this kind of stuff. And they actually had, you know, a Drupal 6 staging site that was, you know, running, so that, you know, they could test, you know, actually, you know, making the database changes and converting this and converting that. And and they sort of they went through that. The process was fairly similar to like you're saying to the what we recommend to our clients and what most people go through. And that they had a testing or staging server where they ran the upgrade, made sure that it all went went as planned. It tested it out, made sure it went well, and then took went to do it live and took Drupal.org offline to perform the upgrade, and sort of ran into some challenges. And again, one of the other things that Drupal.org does a lot of that. Most people will never have to worry about, except the sites that are sort of on the high end of in terms of scale and performance. So Drupal.org runs on, I believe it's currently four servers, four or five, so that they've got a multi-server architecture. There are a couple layers of sort of aggressive caching and all of this kind of stuff, and so making sure that all of those extra pieces are in place and working properly, and then testing all of the various features. But there's there's a lot of moving parts in a Drupal site, and even outside of Drupal itself. So making sure that if you've got three web servers, making sure that they all have appropriate PHP settings and are running effectively mirrors of each other and things like that. So,
So you're saying a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. I would say, when people, people who sort of watched the upgrade happen or were wondering why it took longer than the upgrade team were expecting, most of it boils down to the number of moving parts, so that, you think you've sort of got it all accounted for, and then each of the moving parts starts to get you, and it's complicated, but it's up, and congratulations to the people involved.
Is there anything here? I mean,
all by volunteers. I mean, not like a lot of super high end sites have whole internal teams that are paid to do this, uh-huh. Right? And this is a bunch of volunteers who put together a lot of time and sweat, to make all of this happen as well. So huge kudos. I can't even imagine how exhausted they are.
They were up until I don't even know if the European people slept at all.
I saw them up really late and up early this morning.
Yeah.
So is the process still going on now?
They're kind of hammering out bugs now. Yeah. There was a couple of kind of majorish snafus. I know the book navigation somehow got messed up, and there were issues with uploading attachments to the issue queue, and some other things like that.
Is there anything that can be learned back and forth? I mean, is there anything that people who are listening to the podcast who are running a Drupal site of their own could or should learn from this?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. One of the things is to try and do things in baby steps as much as possible, rather than try and upgrade an entire site and change modules around and change the way search is done and all these other things. Focus on the bare minimum that you have to do during an upgrade, because then if you run into problems, it's a lot easier to that obviously has something to do with this part of it and not other parts of it and stuff like that. So that's one thing. And one thing the Drupal.org redesign team did that was a really great idea was they kind of did a dry run of the upgrade and put that up on a separate domain, d6.drupal.org, and let the community sort of have at it and test it and run into problems. And they were able to fix a whole bunch of stuff way ahead of time by doing that process, which was great. And so I would recommend that as well. Like if you have a company website or whatever, or a community website, you know, put up beta.yourwebsite.com and, you know, just let your content editors mess around with it for a while. Let your users, you know, pick 20 users to go and look at it, or just tell the community, hey, if you want to check this out, you know, go over here. You see Facebook and Google and all these other places doing this all the time. And it's a great idea to help you nail down bugs before you kind of flip the switch. And they were able to identify a number of tiny little things that way too, which was really cool.
Yeah, we definitely tell. I find a lot of times when we're sitting down with our clients to talk about either moving them to Drupal or upgrading and changing features on their site, we talk a lot about sort of a one-to-one change first. So either you move to Drupal with your current feature set, basically just kind of get it over, get into Drupal, start understanding Drupal, and then talk about the new ways that you want to change your site and the features that you want to add. Or if you're up needing to upgrade, if, you know, lots of times, you know, there'll be a version or two behind the current version of Drupal. And it's like, just get it one-to-one features, move to the current version of Drupal, and then start switching around the features. If you can do that. I mean, sometimes that can't always be done, and there's always politics and various things that are going on. But that's usually a good tip for upgrading, is like, try and change as few things as possible. Obviously, when you're upgrading from Drupal 5 to Drupal 6 or from whatever version to whatever version, there's, you know, big sort of fundamental changes that happen during the upgrade process, often like rearranging the way things work in the database or any of that kind of stuff. But usually those are pretty well hammered out, at least for the core stuff. But if you're moving from something to views or those kind of things, that it just gets really complicated really fast.
Yeah, it's good advice. I think, yeah, often the tendency is to say, oh, well, you know, we have to spend a lot of time working on the upgrade. Let's also add in these features and do this and do that. And, you know, trying to do a, you know, sort of a two-step or phased approach reduces the number of potential points of for error, you know. So like Drupal.org went to Drupal 6 and introduced solar searching, and also was, you know, did a lot of things like the module listing page is now actually based on Solr's indexing and things like that. So there's a lot of, you know, not just changing the code to new versions, but also trying to add in, you know, different features and things like that.
And this is a preliminary step to the whole new redesign.
Right. And see, that's worth mentioning here. They did this in this particular instance for a good reason. And the reason is that they have this longer-term vision of Drupal.org redesign. They had these upgrade sprints where they got everybody in the same room. And when you get everybody in the same room, it's a lot better to have them focusing on the longer-term goal. You know, so in this instance, I don't want to paint it like, oh, the people upgraded Drupal.org redesign, or Drupal.org didn't know what the hell they were doing, you know. But basically, like, there's individual circumstances were a lot different.
Yeah,
this was just a one step in a multi step process. This wasn't the end all and be all of this entire process, and so combining these two into this one step is actually a small part.
we're not there yet.
Yeah, not quite. Another thing that you could take away from this as a general tip is stick with well-supported modules that lots of people in the community are using, because those are generally going to be a lot more solid and a lot less work on your part when you need to upgrade your site. So, you know, if you've got, you know, a part of your site that's sort of custom to what you need, you know, step back and think about, well, can that be done with CCK and Vue, so I'm using the same tools as everybody else? And, you know, if I have this custom module that other people might find useful, should I put that out in the contributions repository so I could potentially get a little sub-community around that to help me with upgrades and finding bugs and things like that? Because, you know, that was, you know, part of the goal of the project module maintainers was let's figure out how we can make this more palatable to other people in the community you use, so that we don't run into this problem in the future where we've got this, you know, thousands of lines of code that only three people know about.
And, yeah. And you, when you get to those, I mean, there's some fun modules around the fringe there. But when you're using those, you need to ask whether they are central to your site functioning. If you're mm-hmm. using those fringe modules for the central functioning of your site, it can be problematic. It's just a less well-worn path.
I'd say the other big lesson, and hopefully the members of the infrastructure team won't lynch me in DC or anything, but keep very close track of, so as Lullabot, we spend a lot of time, and I think as the Drupal community, we spend a lot of time saying, don't hack core. So Drupal.org hacks core sometimes, for performance reasons, if you do have a reason or a necessity to do that, keeping really good track of what you've done, but also, you know, sort of related, but not directly related, you know, keeping track of any changes you make. So looking at, you know, the sort of remaining issues for stuff from the Drupal.org upgrade, you know, things like adding a database index, you know, for performance reasons. You know, if you do it sort of in one version and it doesn't make it to the next version, or you haven't accounted for it in the upgrade to the next version, that's going to be something that'll bite you. Again, a lot of the things that Drupal.org has to focus on are not problems that most websites have. Drupal.org is a very high traffic site. It's a very active site. It's a site that faces, you know, performance and scaling issues that, you know, most sites don't, but that just makes it, you know, all the more important to, if you are working on those big sites, making sure that any change that you've made, you know, whether it be, you know, altering a line of code or making changes to, you know, indexes and things in the database, or, you know, like I said, PHP configuration changes, anything like that needs to be accounted for, and you need to make sure that you don't lose that as you move forward to new releases and new upgrades.
Related to that, in a way, is like another sort of general tip that's good if you can do, and it's harder and harder to do the more complex your site is when you have like these multiple web servers and there's like all this, you know, squid and proxy caching, whatever stuff, you know. But is to actually do your testing of your upgrade on the same system, you know, using the same hardware and software and PHP and MySQL and stuff, so that, you know, you don't get caught by those gotchas where, oh, it all works locally. You know, and then you go off to the actual server and that server's configured it a little differently and it actually ends up tripping you up somewhere. So that's also just something else that if you can do it, I mean, sometimes you can't always do it because you have huge, beefy, expensive server and you can't replicate that for the upgrade and stuff like that. But as close as you can get to that as possible is something to really pay attention to.
Cool. Wow. That was. I think we can call that a podcast.
Are we done? Are we done?
Yeah, we have other things on our list that we could talk about, but let's put those off to another podcast. I think we're going to start a section of the podcast. Whenever we get to these, like, you know, podcast number that ends in a zero, we feel like, oh, we should do something special. With the top 40 modules podcast was hugely popular and people are still referring to that. And now it's 30 podcasts ago. It was like, I don't know, what, a year and a half ago or something like that. And so we got to number 70 and we thought, oh, we should do another top whatever podcast. And I think what we're going to start doing is more like a picks. Like, just each week to kind of focus on a couple of, not necessarily even modules, but just like things that we're...
Tips or cool things.
Tips or cool things. Yeah. Yeah. And, I have one. I'll just throw out one this week. I know we weren't going to do it, but I just want to throw out mine because it's so cool. And then we'll just, next week we'll do this for real. But have you guys seen the Cobalt module?
Not at all.
Oh, man. It's so cool.
It's got a good name, though.
I don't know if all of you are as crazy with, like, using Quicksilver on the Mac as I am.
Live by it.
I cannot, like, when I sit down and I type control space and it doesn't bring up Quicksilver, it's like,
I don't even know how to get the Quicksilver to be able to start it.
Exactly. It's like, something's wrong with your Mac. I don't know what's going on here, you know? It's just so, like, it's a really, really fast way to open applications or find files or people or anything on your Mac. And the Cobalt module basically is that, but for Drupal. And it implements it in a really interesting way. It creates some people might get uncomfortable about this, but it uses Google Gears to basically create a local database of all of the stuff on your server. Names of users and names of nodes and other content and stuff like that. And basically you just type alt space or control space if you're on a try them both once you install it. And then you could just start typing, the name of a content item or a name of a, if you want to go to the users page, just start typing US and it looks just like Quicksilver. And it has that same sort of functionality where you have an object and a verb. So, you know, normally it'll go to it, but there are other things that you can do. So you can pick a node item. If you have one called front page of your site, let's say you type FRO and then it pops up front page, and then you type tab and click EDI and it'll say edit, and you can edit your front page. Just bang, you hit return and there you are editing your homepage. It's super, super cool, but definitely qualifies as one of those like kind of fringe modules, but your site's just fine without it. It's just like always where you have to navigate through all the different menus to try and find your stuff. But there's been a couple of different sort of attempts at this idea of sort of Quicksilver for Drupal. There's another one, I think it was called Teleport, and I liked that one too, but I like this one even better. And having all the stuff locally means it doesn't actually need to do an Ajax server call in order to have the things pop up. So it's super snappy and a little bit feels a little bit like magic to use it. And I think it's got a sort of a pluggable architecture where you can create plugins for different kinds of things. And it hasn't gotten a whole lot of press, but I think it's really neat. Drupal.org/project/cobalt. There you go.
Woohoo!
So that's my pick. You guys have any picks? I know, we just sprung this. It was out of nowhere. I know. We'll do more picks next podcast. I'm sorry.
We'll do next, mind up.
Everybody, put together. Think about it. Think all just awesome stuff. We post about this stuff on Lullabot a lot of times, and we'll bring them here into the podcast as well. So, cool. Well, there you go. We'll call that a podcast. If you guys are okay with that,
I'm cool with that.
I'm down.
Cool. And we'll see everybody in DC. Please come up and say hello to us. We love to meet all the new people. And if you're going to DC DrupalCon, look for us. We'll look just like we always do and come up and say hello. Most of the Lullabots are speaking in various things. James and Angie and Addie and Jeff Eaton and I don't know if
and Nick, Matt and Liza.
And Matt and Liza. Oh, yeah. Liza's speaking on something. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Liza's our business person. She sort of focuses on the business aspect of things and doesn't oftentimes get to speak at these Drupal things. But she's going to... What's she talking about?
The business of open source. Actually, we were talking through her her outline earlier this week. And I think it's going to be a really, really good talk. She's got some good ideas. And if you want to find out more about what makes Lullabot tick from a business angle.
Right on. Follow us on Twitter. Like I said, subscribe to our mailing list and we'll kind of let people know what's going on. Twitter is good because it's really fast and we'll probably post a bunch of stuff there. If you're not already on Twitter, you can get Twitter messages to your cell phone, which is really handy to follow us. But you just text follow, space Lullabot to 40404 on your cell phone. I think that only works for North American users. I think Twitter has a different short code in the UK and Europe in general. So once you get to the States, follow Lullabot to 40404, and that'll sign you up for Twitter if you're not already signed up, or if you are, then you'll get Lullabot messages on your phone. There you go. And we'll see you at DrupalCon, and we'll do another podcast with more picks. All right, cool. Take care, everybody.
Right, guys.
Bye-bye.
Later.
Bye.